First time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. The exchange of threats and harsh rhetoric between North Korea and U.S. President Donald Trump has rattled many investors. Stock prices fell in Asia, Europe, and the United States while demand rose for safe haven investments like gold. Wednesday, key stock indexes in Hong Kong, Germany, and France were down by 1% or more. U.S. stocks were off as much as 0.4 percentage points during Wednesday's trading, but recovered some ground by the close before Tuesday's angry exchange of words. U.S. stocks had been setting a series of record highs. Meanwhile, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert says that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and many others stand with President Trump.
We would like to see results. The pressure campaign, we see that working. The international community is in agreement with the United States and many of our partners and allies on putting additional pressure on North Korea. The secretary happens to be coming back from the ASEAN conference where they had tremendous success. It was a good week for diplomacy.
North Korea's threat against Guam spotlights a Western Pacific U.S. territory that looms large as a military asset despite being smaller than Singapore. But its governor, Eddie Baza Calvo, says he's not rattled by the North Korean threats.
At this point, there has been no change in the security situation here in Guam. I've gotten assurances, again, from all levels, both local command and in Washington, D.C., that this island will be defended and is... And the United States military has their forces ready to protect and defend not only Guam, but all American interest in this region and the homeland.
Pyongyang is about 3,300 kilometers northwest of Guam. This is VOA News. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta appears headed for re-election, while his opponent charges massive fraud in Tuesday's elections. Kenya's Election Commission said as of late Wednesday, with 96% of polling places counted, Kenyatta led opposition leader Raila Odinga 54% to 44%. Officials have up to a week to verify the results and announce a winner, but Odinga alleges hackers carried out what he calls a massive and extensive attack on the Election Commission's computer system and that the results announced so far are fraudulent. Shortly after Odinga spoke Wednesday, several hundred protesters in his western stronghold burned tires and clashed with police who fired tear gas. Six Red Cross workers were among 30 people killed in clashes between a militia and self-defense group in southeastern Central African Republic. News of the bloodshed emerged Wednesday, 6 days after the violent fighting at a health center 70 kilometers from a town started. Last week's incident was the third this year in which the Red Cross workers and the CAR have been among the casualties. Many humanitarian workers have been blocked from doing their work, and militants also have tried to kill wounded enemies in public health facilities. U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation agents raided the home of President Donald Trump's former campaign chief in the pre-dawn hours late last month, intensifying their probe of Russian interference in last year's presidential election. The raid on the home of Paul Manafort, a longtime Republican political operative who has had deep financial ties to Russia and Ukraine, occurred just outside Washington in suburban Virginia and without warning. Aides to the 68-year-old Manafort confirmed Wednesday that federal agents executed a search warrant on July 26th, seizing documents and other materials. Pakistan's former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif held a rally Wednesday to demonstrate political power. This is just days after the country's highest court disqualified him from holding office for concealing his assets. Critics are questioning his tactics, which they say defies the rule of law and demonizes the Supreme Court. Sharif left the national capital, Islamabad, Wednesday, bound for Lahore, his native city in eastern Pakistan. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration has imposed sanctions on 8 more Venezuelan officials in retaliation for helping create a new legislative body that is expanding the power of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The sanctions were announced Wednesday by the U.S. Treasury Department. They will freeze the U.S. assets of the target officials, including the brother of a deceased Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, August the 10th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. As Kenyans wait for the announcements of the official election results, former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says Kenya's ability to secure its voting system appears to be very strong.
It is also going to be critical that the leaders of Kenya step up and lead in the next days to give people confidence that this process is being worked through carefully and thoughtfully and respectfully.
Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking to reporters in Nairobi. Meanwhile, reports said that three people were killed after an attack inside a vote tallying center in Tana River, where counting of votes from the various polling stations was ongoing. And in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, a grenade attack killed one person and injured five others.
It's an unidentified criminal who attacked by grenade in a bar. It was about 9 p.m. One people died and five were injured. And now police are going with the police investigation.
Burundi's police spokesperson Pierre Ngurikiye. And it has been 12 years since local elections were held in Guinea, and concerns are starting to mount that President Alpha Conde might try to run for a third term in 2020. Stay tuned, those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says Kenya's ability to secure its voting system appears to be very strong. Secretary Kerry is leading a mission of election observers. He spoke as Kenya's Election Commission defended its electronic voting system from opposition candidate Raila Odinga's allegations that the system was hacked.
It is also going to be critical that the leaders of Kenya step up and lead in the next days to give people confidence that this process is being worked through carefully and thoughtfully and respectfully. The one thing that I think we would like to emphasize, all of us who have been observers so far, and I say so far, is that the IEBC has put in place a system that provides redundancy, that the ability of the ballots to be secured and to be able to be counted appears to be very, very strong. And so you have these forms that are coming in reflecting everybody in the polling station's view of what happened.
Speaking to reporters, Secretary Kerry said that the international community was committed to helping Kenyans in their democratic process.
The international community is going to remain committed to Kenya and to the Kenyan people and to the democracy of Kenya.
Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking in Nairobi, Kenya. Meanwhile, reports say that three people were killed after an attack inside a vote tallying center on Kenya's coast. A gang stormed the building in Tana River County, killing a man who was working for the ruling Jubilee Party and injuring another. Police then shot dead two attackers. Kenyan police also opened fire to disperse rioters in several areas after opposition leader Raila Odinga said that hackers had used the identity of a murdered Electoral Commission official to infiltrate the database of the Election Commission and alter the results. Odinga says votes were manipulated in favor of President Uhuru Kenyatta, who holds a strong lead with 96% of polling stations counted. Kenya's Electoral Commission is getting closer to reporting results of Tuesday's national elections. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
The usually busy streets of Nairobi were quiet Wednesday as results of Tuesday's polls continued to flow into Kenya's National Electoral Counting Center and then out to the public as they were tabulated. The National Super Alliance Coalition's opposition presidential candidate, Raila Odinga, said Wednesday morning that the Electoral Commission should not be releasing provisional results without verification through the official forms that were supposed to accompany them from the polling stations and constituencies.
We are basically telling our people not to accept these results. These are fraudulent results. not only the presidential, but right through from the governors up to the MCAs. This is what we're telling Kenyans, and we're asking them to stay calm, remain calm.
Earlier, Odinga tweeted, "The fraud Jubilee has perpetrated on Kenyans surpasses any level of voter theft in our country's history. This time we caught them." He was referring to what he says was a hack of the Electoral Commission's computer systems. Raphael Tuju is the Secretary General of Jubilee, the party of incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta.
Well, we know that it's been a very hard-fought campaign, and whoever emerges as the winner, there will be a loser. And when somebody loses, it's a fairly emotive issue, especially when you invested emotions, money, time, and energy in the campaign. But our appeal is that we should accept the results. That is what our president committed himself to, and we do hope that NASA themselves commit themselves to the same.
Electoral Commission Chairman Wafula Chebukati said Wednesday that NASA was casting dispersions on one item of the electoral process, the transmission of results.
But what we are saying is, from what I understood, the only issue is on the results transmission, not on the whole electoral process. And that's why the commission is going a little bit, a mile longer, that instead of us just relying on the transmitted results, we're also calling for the original documents for purposes of knowing and verifying before we do the final announcement.
Chebukati said his team was in possession of scanned copies of forms from all 40,883 polling stations and is awaiting scanned copies from the 290 constituencies. He also said that they will be using the original forms to verify the provisional results. The commission also has announced that if there is a discrepancy between electronic and hard copy results, the signed hard copies will be final. Chebukati assured Kenyans that the official results will be released only after the signed forms from the polling stations have been verified. As a whole, the country has remained peaceful. Police used tear gas against demonstrators in the western Kenyan city of Kisumu, and there also were protests in the Nairobi slum of Mathare. But for the majority of Kenyans, for now, it's just a waiting game. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
The rights group Amnesty International is calling on police not to use unnecessary force in handling any post-election violence. Amnesty says it has so far received reports that crowds are gathering in Nairobi's Mathare slums and in the Kondeli area of Kisumu, a pro-opposition county that has been an epicenter of crackdowns by the police in previous elections. Reuters reported that hundreds of men took to the streets of Kisumu town, an opposition stronghold. Police used tear gas to disperse the protesters. A grenade attack killed one person and injured five in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. This comes as the country is relatively gaining stability since the violent protests that erupted in 2015 when President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a disputed third term in office. Moses Havyarimana has this report.
The attack on a local bar located in Buyenzi, a Bujumbura suburb, is among the series of grenade attacks that have continued to rock Burundi. More than 15 people have been killed in the last 3 months by grenade explosions, with at least 10 of them killed last month. The Burundi government says that the attacks are not politically motivated, regardless government officials falling victims. The Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye says that the recent attack wasn't targeting any individual.
It's an unidentified criminal who attacked by grenade in a bar. It was about 9 p.m. One people died and five were injured. And now police are going with the police investigation.
Both government officials and opposition members have been targeted since 2015. When protests against the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza erupted. Since then, more than 500 people have been killed and hundreds of thousands fled to the neighboring countries. The Burundi police spokesman says that the culprits were arrested and investigations are still ongoing.
Most of them have been arrested. We're still looking for one of two people who made the last attack in Buiza, got here in Bujumbura capital city.
Yesterday, police is still going with the investigation. Nobody has been arrested.
As Burundi is relatively gaining stability compared to 2015, President Pierre Nkurunziza called on the refugees to voluntarily repatriate and that the country is safe. However, Burundi opposition leader and deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, says that Burundi government should focus more on democracy.
We'd better first fix what is there currently happening. We see a Burundi where opposition has no room. So I think they'd better try to be realistic. Burundi is a country which can do better at the only condition that there is acceptation of each and every citizen in the country.
Last week, Burundi Senate rejected the European Union Parliament resolution on the current political situation in the country. The European Union Parliament urged Burundi government to cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry to investigate human rights violations. The government said that it can independently investigate and bring perpetrators to justice. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And it has been 12 years since local elections were held in Guinea, and concerns are mounting that President Alpha Conde might try and run for a third term in 2020. Matthias Honyipe is a political governance manager for Open Society Initiative of West Africa. He spoke to Ricky Shryock about the worrying developments in Guinea's political scene.
I mean, recently in Guinea, we observed at least two things. The first one is that the opposition coalition will start holding demonstrations and rallies because they feel that the government is not holding its promises based on the political agreement that they reached in October last year, especially on the fact that they should have held by now the local election. That is one thing. But the second thing that happened like a few days ago is also the replacement or the dismissal of the chair of the Electoral Commission. So while we are talking about the delay in the holding of local elections, the chair of the Electoral Commission has just been dismissed and replaced by somebody else. And it seems like the issue is not resolved yet. So we can say that in terms of holding the elections, for instance, the situation currently is like in standstill.
How does this reflect concerns that Alpha Conde will try and run for an unconstitutional third term for president in 2020?
So far, the president Conde has not said by himself that he wanted to run. But every time that the question has been raised in public conferences and so on, he just said that this is not his concern for now because he's focusing on how to resolve development challenges confronting Guinea.
Why wouldn't he just say no? Because currently, and under the current constitution, he can't.
Exactly, exactly. So that is one of the reasons why people are worrying about what his intentions are. The second reason why people are worrying is that if his ruling coalition starts holding meetings, calling for the renewal of his term in office, for him to do another term. And even some of them are starting saying that the constitution that is being forced now has been adopted by a transitional parliament, and so it's not a valid, legitimate constitution. So we are starting hearing from people near him about the idea of him staying for another term. But as I said, he has not said anything. Somebody like Obama said several times before he left office for the constitution of staying for more than two terms. So it would have been easy for him to just say that. But he hasn't said.
The government of Malawi announced that it plans to conduct a public inquiry on whether to review its laws that criminalize homosexuality. But the announcement has drawn mixed reactions from religious leaders and human rights campaigners. Religious leaders are pushing for a referendum on the issue, while human rights campaigners say rights issues do not need a vote. Homosexuality is an offense in Malawi, punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi Human Rights Commission said this week that the public inquiry is aimed to establish how much people understand about homosexuality and rights. The commission also said the inquiry will help establish the population of homosexuals in Malawi. This follows years of debate among Malawians on whether the country should legalize homosexuality. But religious leaders have faulted the inquiry, saying the government would have organized a referendum on the matter. Evangelical Association of Malawi, a grouping of religious bodies, says in a statement that repealing the laws that criminalize homosexuality without a referendum is not only wrong and unacceptable, but also a gross violation of the Constitution. Janet Banda is the Solicitor General. She told a local radio this week that public inquiry and referendum are just the same.
A referendum is the same thing. The outcome wouldn't be any different from a public inquiry because it's the very same process of converting people to find out their views.
She says the only difference is that holding a referendum is more expensive than public inquiry. Timothy Ntambo is a human rights campaigner. He told VOA that there is no need to vote on human rights issues.
You cannot subject a human rights issue to a vote because the rights, it's not about the majority. Did we have a referendum on the right to education? Did we have a referendum to say, let's vote whether Malawians want a child to have rights? So all these things are fallacies.
Ntambo, who is the executive director for the NGO Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, says the government should rather focus on educating people on human rights.
People should understand the rights. Let's not politicize human rights issues. We're talking about issues of life. These are human beings. Okay, we may not like them. We may not like what they do, but they are human beings.
Malawi government suspended the enforcement of the anti-gay laws 5 years ago, pending parliamentary review after rights campaigners said the laws were unconstitutional. However, the High Court annulled the moratorium last year after three pastors complained that the government's suspension of the anti-homosexuality law was illegal. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
And rights activists in Uganda are calling on the government to make laws and invest in facilities that will help protect the rights of indigenous minority groups in the country. Joel Cox Ojuko, a member of a coalition for the rights of indigenous minority groups in Uganda, says that some minority groups may easily become extinct if the government does not invest in social and economic amenities for the minority groups. Reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
Ojuko says indigenous minority groups, or AMGs, in Uganda continue to face various human rights violations, including forced evictions from their ancestral land without their consent or compensations. For example, he says the Bato people were evicted by the government from Bindi and Semlik forests to create a national park in western Uganda.
Where IMGs have been displaced from ancestral land, it has denied them ability to access land that they would have traditionally used for economic or cultural purposes. The IMGs are poor and lack political representation and at both the district and national levels, thus aggravating their social and economic status.
According to the 2014 Uganda census, there are at least 17 ethnic groups that have fewer than 25,000 people in the country. These include Aliba, Batwa, the Banyabindi, Basongora, Jimara, Aike, and Lendu. Others are Bagangezi, Basese, Meru, Benet, Mwangar, Bayaga, and Banyanyanja. Most of these people live or prefer to depend on natural means of survival, like hunting or eating wild fruits. Barbara Wabwetera is the Deputy Executive Director of the Cross Culture Foundation of Uganda NGO that helps advocate for rights of minorities. She says indigenous minorities are always marginalized in Ugandan communities.
What I could just say is that a Mutwa, an Ik, or a Munyavindi are human beings just like you and me. Only that they are minority and they are discriminated by even those who are around them simply because of the difference in the cultures. Because you'll find, for example, a Mutwa, it's not very common for the Mutwa to be fully dressed up because it's not their concern, it's not their lifestyle.
She says the only way to end this is to sensitize the communities about the rights of these people and help them access to education. Alana Kembabazi, the program manager for ICERL, a local human rights NGO, agrees, and she says the laws protecting the minorities must also be translated into their local languages.
All those protections end up being in law. So when they're not translated, what meaning do they have for the person that is on the ground, right? And we've seen a lot of violations, you know, but for a lot of those people, until they're able to internalize their rights, and I think translating the laws assists in that, they'll continue to be exploited and to continue to threaten their very existence.
Activists recommend that indigenous groups are recognized in the Ugandan constitution and are allowed to live in their ancestral land, provided with better infrastructure like schools and hospitals. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
And Zimbabwe's government plans to build a $1 billion university named after its president, Robert Mugabe. The move was quickly criticized by the opposition as a waste of resources. Jonathan Moyo, Higher and Tertiary Education Minister, says the Robert Gabriel Mugabe University will focus on science and technology and have an institute focusing on research and, quote, transformative and revolutionary leadership. Minister Moyo says that Zimbabwe's government had approved a grant of $800 million towards the construction of the Robert Gabriel Mugabe University and another grant of $200 million towards the University Endowment Fund for Research and Innovation. 93-year-old President Mugabe and his wife, Grace, are the founding trustees of the university that would be built outside the capital, Harare. The main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, criticized the plan, saying that Mugabe's government should instead improve existing underfunded universities around the country. The opposition says students at state-run universities and colleges struggle with lack of accommodation and crumbling infrastructure, while the government does not offer grants to help the universities. And that's it for this Thursday, August the 10th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow morning for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, troubling times in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The United States says it's concerned at the inability of both the DRC government and an opposition coalition to implement a political transition agreement reached last December. A DRC political discussion.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Cloti, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information. VOAAfrica.com.
News, features, music from Africa and around the world. You want it? We have it on VOAAfrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
All day, all night.